Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Erin Griebel. I appear on behalf of Relator Scott Fravel. Relator requests the court make its preliminary written prohibition permanent because application of the lifetime supervision statute to first-time status offenders serving probation twists the meaning of the statute. The issue before the court is whether the legislature's 2006 addition of the word or to the lifetime registration statute so altered its meaning that individuals convicted of certain offenses within the statute are subject to it even without a prior offense. Your Honors, in 2005, Section 559106, the lifetime supervision statute, was originally enacted. There were three key modifiers. The first one came right up front. It's the probation clause, when a court grants probation to, and then it listed the groups of offenses all together without separating them by anything other than commas. The second two key modifiers came at the end. The first was when a victim is under age of 14, and then the final modifier, and the offender is a prior sex offender, modified the entire statute. In 2006, the legislature amended or repealed and then reenacted 559106. It added or and then some introductory language that appears in front of what is now the first group and the second group, which is when a person has pleaded guilty to or has been convicted of. So the way the statute appeared in 2006, the probation clause remained. The first four offenses remained perfectly unchanged, and those include the forcible offenses of forcible rape, forcible sodomy, and then also the status offenses for rape and sodomy in the first degree. Then came the or, and again the repetition of the introductory phrase, when a person pleads guilty to or has been found convicted of. And then we find what is now group two, which is the remainder of the offenses that were listed before. Among the second group, we have child molestation, sexual misconduct with a child, enticement, trafficking of children under the age of 12, incest, use of child in a sexual performance, and promoting such performance.
Isn't it a reasonable policy determination by the legislature that such offenses that are of the forcible nature are serious enough that prior convictions aren't necessary and that lifetime supervision is appropriate?
Sure, Your Honor. There's two ways to look at it, perhaps. The first, as the state offered in its brief and that we're willing to accept, which is in the first group, the forcible offenses may not really be in play because they're not eligible for probation. So because that first clause, at the least, is modified by the probation clause, and you can never get probation for forcible rape of sodomy, then, in effect, the only operative offenses left in that first group are the status offenses. Then the rest of the rationale we submit is that the level of force or violence can't be the distinguishing feature between the two groups, because group two includes sexual abuse, which includes as an element the threat or use of force. So it is in effect more of a forceful offense in terms of the statutory element than the status offense, at least in the first degree.
What do you propose the purpose of the amendment was?
We propose that the purpose of the addition of the or, as well as the repetition of that introductory phrase, serve to limit the reach of that first modifier, the probation clause. That instead of the statute applying to all of the offenses only upon the grant of probation, that the legislature determined that those first group of offenses, in particular the status offenses, because they're probation eligible, were the most likely of all of these offenses to get probation, and they left that the same. But given the relative seriousness of the other offenses, including the forcible offense of sexual abuse and the trafficking in children, the legislature decided that lifetime supervision should attach upon a subsequent offense whether or not a person received probation on that offense. So the practical effect then is that the statute was broadened to a degree. It would apply to the second grouping of offenses whether a person received probation or jail time. It would continue to apply to the first group of offenses only upon the grant of probation. And what the state has argued is that the legislature's additional language, which broadened the applicability of the statute as to the second group, actually broadened it much more as to the first group by implication. And we submit that's that simply can't be the case that the legislature would expand the scope as to the second group of offenses to make it attach whether or not a person got probation, and it would attach regardless, and that that somehow operates to, in fact, broaden the applicability of that first group of offenses without even requiring the prior offense. And so what the state is saying is that, or, even though it's directed at what is now the second group of offenses, that somehow, by virtue of the last antecedent rule, that the modifiers that you find at the bottom of the statute, which used to modify only a year prior, used to modify the entire statute, now merely modify that second grouping of offenses. We submit that's not the case, and that the last antecedent rule has no application here, because there's indication of the legislature's intent. The modification occurred between the groupings of offenses. It did create a second group, and it did broaden the statute as to that second group. But the language as to that first group stayed the same. The language at the bottom of the statute also remained unchanged.
But as to that second group after the or the offender has pleaded guilty to or has been found guilty of an offense, child molestation, sexual misconduct, etc., against a victim who is less than 14 years, and the offender is a prior sex offender, the court shall order the offender be supervised by Board of Probation Pro for the duration of his or her natural life. Would that encompass somebody who'd been sent to prison? And then as a matter of the sentence, the judge would say you're sentenced to 5 years in prison, but upon release from prison, you'll be on parole for the duration of your life under the last part of that sentence. Am I misreading that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. There are definitely some quirks in the statute, but as to the second group...
That'd be an understatement about the quirks. I'm just trying to figure out what the heck it means.
Sure. Well, if the court were to accept our position, which is the probation clause is now limited and only modifies that first group, then that means that for the second group, yes, the provisions of the statute would apply, given that there was a second offense, whether a person received jail time or probation.
So the second group, the one that we're talking about after the or, which is on line 2 of page 8 of your brief, that's where I'm reading from, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the second group. The offender has pleaded guilty to or been found guilty of these other offenses, and the offender is a prior sex offender. Where does your guy fit in, by the way? I've been reading the statute. I got confused. Where is he?
He's in the first group.
He's a first-time status offender, statutory rape.
He's in the first group, so he doesn't necessarily fall under what your argument is that he's not in the second group, and that the thing about being a prior offender only applies to the people in the second group, not the first group.
It applies to both groups, you're saying?
And shouldn't we be in, shouldn't the...
is that a yes? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was answering yes to Judge Stith, that in what the state is arguing, that by virtue of the 2006 amendment, that the prior offender applies only to the second group, the later group of offenses. We're arguing that just as it did in 2005, it still applies to the entire statute and all of the offenses.
And can you explain again, because it is so confusing, why then they separated out those first offenses? Because those apply regardless whether the victim is a child of under 14, if they wanted to segregate that part out? Or
perhaps. In 2005, it would have made sense when that second-to-last modifier, victim under the age 14, modified the entire thing. For the first grouping, the status offenses, the victim is already under age 14. In that second group, the age groupings really vary anywhere from 17, 18, down to 12. That would make sense. Here, the under age 14 still brings some of those offenses where the age is later, the offenses, I'm sorry, in the second
grouping. Are you saying the underage 14 applies to that first group or it does not?
My honest answer is that I don't know. It doesn't have to, because the forcible offenses are inoperative because they're not probation eligible. So in terms of the first group, that modifier is perhaps slightly redundant, just as it would have been in 2005.
But if it's disjunctive, if the or is disjunctive, mm-hmm. and your client violated the first four offenses, we don't, by the standard of interpretation, We don't reach the second group. We just deal with your client in the first group.
Well, Your Honor, we would submit that if that were the case because of the last antecedent rule, that those modifiers are only important because they modify the second grouping, then in fact that rule need not apply here. And we would point to a recent case before the court, Spradling v. SSM Healthcare, which was decided on June 29th of this year. And in that case, the court examined whether or not it should apply the last antecedent rule because, again, you have the problem where the modifier, something that modifies an entirety of a phrase or a subsection, comes at the end of the subsection. And in that situation, the court said that no. If there is, and also citing to Norberg v. Montgomery in 1944, that if there is even the slightest indication of the legislature's intent that the modifier was intended to reach beyond that which immediately precedes it and to the remainder of the applicable section, then that is how the court would interpret it. And so just as that was true in Spradling, we submit that it is true here. And the indication of the legislature's intent is the 2005 enactment. It's also by implication that in 2006 there was a revision, but there was no revision of those final modifiers. And we would say that the implication is that they were meant to stay the same. And therefore, they would apply also to the first grouping, Your Honor.
This is just another occasion when I wish I remembered that diagramming of sentences stuff that I learned in third grade.
But the first two statutory first sodomy and both of those already involve people under 14, don't they?
The status offenses do, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so the second part is consistent with that. They're different crimes, but it wants to make sure that it's applying to people who prey on young children.
Correct.
So why is it not sensible to have the two separate deals, but to add prior offender because the crimes aren't as serious in the second group?
There's perhaps two reasons. The first would be that whether they're operative or not, the forcible offenses are still included in that first grouping, and there's no age limit on forcible rape or forcible sodomy.
But they don't apply, as you pointed out.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true, though they are there, and their existence should be given, I suppose, some meaning.
So what meaning are you giving it?
Well, we're willing to accept the state's explanation that perhaps the legislature foresaw a point in time in the future, however unlikely, that maybe those forcible offenses would once again become eligible for probation. They're not now. But if they were, then that wouldn't cause them to have to also amend this statute.
There's no other meaning you can ascribe to it.
The inclusion of the forcible offenses, uh-huh. Your Honor?
Under either of your interpretations, otherwise it has no real sense.
Well, in terms of the victim under age 14 modifier, perhaps not. I think with regard to the statute as a whole, that there might be another avenue to ascribe it some meaning, which is that, depending on how you read it, and it certainly does. But if, because the offenses are enumerated, it would seem that when a person comes around on a subsequent offense, that the statute is enumerating the offenses for which this will apply. And so if the prior offense was a forcible rape, for example, and it wasn't enumerated for some reason, there would be room to argue, potentially, mm-hmm. that the statute doesn't apply to that person, when certainly forcible rape is an included sex offense. It's even a Chapter 566 offense, even though for a reason that's not entirely clear, in subsection 2 of this statute, it states that prior sex offenses are defined only as to Chapter 566. However, 3 of the sex offenses in the second grouping come out of Chapter 568 because they're offenses, sex offenses against the mm-hmm. family, which is another one of those quirks that I mentioned. But we think that, yes, the statute as a whole, it does make sense to have the forcible offenses still there. I also...
I was just going to say, you certainly paid rapt attention to your sentence structuring and grammar lessons when you were a youngster.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, your time has expired. Is there no further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. When the legislature changed the statute in 2006, that was presumed to have some effect. And under the reading that the relator would have the court give to the statute in its current form, essentially we're just going back to the 2005 version of the statute, where all the offenses that were listed in the statute required that the victim be under the age of 14 and the offender be a prior sex offender in order to be eligible for the lifetime supervision. By separating the four offenses out, putting that word or in there, and again repeating the date as well as when the offense occurred, that showed a clear intent to treat offenders who plead guilty or are convicted of those offenses differently from those who plead guilty to or are convicted of the remaining offenses in the statute. And the only real way to treat them differently under the statute as is written is to limit the application, the requirement of a victim under the age of 14 and the status as a prior sex offender, to those persons who plead guilty to or are convicted of the latter grouping of statutes rather than the grouping of statutes that appear before that conjunctive or disjunctive word or, again, preceded by a comma as well, which is another rule that's been used to limit the scope of qualifying phrases. One other thing I think that it's important to mention, I mentioned in the briefs, and it kind of relates to a question that Judge Wolf asked about what if the person gets sent to prison. We have to keep in mind there's another statute just about identical to this one. It's 217.735, which deals with persons that are, in fact, sent to prison. It's an identical statute to this. It has the same offenses. It's structured all the same way, except the scope of it is greater in that it applies to people who are released on probation, parole, or who serve their entire sentence without getting any early release. All of those people are subject to a lifetime supervision, even those people that serve the entire sentence. So,
and does that include people in this first group of offenses?
Yes, it would. Absolutely. It's the exact same offenses. They're grouped in the same manner.
Now, your opponent says that none of the offenses in the first part of the statute are eligible for probation. Why did the legislature say
two of them. The first group, you've got forcible rape, forcible sodomy, statutory rape, statutory sodomy. At the same time that this statute was amended in 2006, in that same final bill, the forcible rape, forcible sodomy statutes had some provisions added that said persons found guilty of those crimes are not eligible for a suspended imposition or suspended execution of sentence.
So you really think it's an artifact of this change?
I think it is. And I know we indulge in a lot of presumptions about how the legislature goes about passing laws. As some of you know, I was a legislative reporter for 5 years. I've got a pretty good idea of what actually happens over there. And you've got two different chambers, and I think I've set this out in the brief. There's a difference in how the Senate, or how the House originally handled this, how the Senate handled it as it went through. You get a lot of stuff that gets in there together, and a lot of pressure, a lot of time, and sometimes things that maybe should be cleaned up just don't get cleaned up.
Repeal of the old law and an adoption totally of the whole new law?
Yes, it was. And I think we discussed that somewhat in the second point. The title of the bill was an act to repeal sections, including this one, and to enact new provisions in lieu thereof. So it was that. Again, I think it's just most likely a surplus language. I don't think it affects the analysis of whether the statutory crimes are subject to the modifiers in that second grouping. I don't see how that honestly affects that analysis one way or the other. And again, to the arguments that you have to give effect to the entire bill, I think when you read the provisions of this statute along with the statute in 217, I think everybody that falls within any of these statutes under one of those statutes or the other gets covered, so nobody's being left out. If there are some other questions, I hope...
Yeah. Were there any cases or anything that intervened between 2005 and 2006 that indicate why this change was made?
No, not that I'm aware of. I've certainly looked at both statutes on Westlaw and found no cases underneath them.
And it's your understanding that the first four, that is for the second grouping, if you get probation on this and you're in the second grouping, then you're not subject to lifetime supervision.
Well, you're subject to lifetime supervision if the other two conditions are met, victim under the age of 14 and you're a prior sex offender.
Right, right. But, okay.
But otherwise, no.
Okay.
Unless there are any other questions, I'll stand on the arguments in the brief and ask that the preliminary writ be quashed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. With regard to 217.735, it's an analogous statute. It tracks the language of this statute, 559.106, but we submit that it's completely different. It wouldn't track the language and be so redundant unless it had a different purpose. The different purpose is that it's a directive to the Board of Probation and Parole as to what it should do, when and if it has the authority to do so. But it remains the case that a person must be sentenced to a certain term, and that sentence must be imposed by a court. It's not imposed by the Board of Probation and Parole. And so 217.735 can only exert as much power as 559.106 can. Your Honors, I wanted to get to your question, Your Honor, about whether or not there was case law that indicated why this change may have occurred. We submit that there may be, and that case is the Missouri Association of Club Executives v. State. It's 208 Southwest 3rd, 885. And that in that case, there was a group of amendments to a bill that passed through in 2005. Some of the changes that occurred to 559-106 happened at the same time. This court held that with regard to the group of amendments that concerned, I believe, nightclub operators and owners, that they were unconstitutional for violating the original purpose portion of the Missouri Constitution. And the court noted in footnote 1 that perhaps the same was true of the other amendments because the original purpose of the bill was intoxicated driving-related offenses. We submit that perhaps there was a tip-off of some nature to the legislature that there is a constitutional procedural issue and that that might have precipitated the repeal and reenactment of this statute in 2006. Also, Your Honors, I would like to draw your attention to State v. Tier, 275 Southwest 3rd, 258.
In fact, the club executive case had been decided in the trial court prior to the statute being amended.
Pardon, Your Honor?
Let's see, the club executive's case, was that decided in the trial court before the amendments that you're talking about to this statute took place?
No, Your Honor. In fact, defendant didn't appear at the circuit court. He was told he needn't.
Pardon?
So he wasn't present. And he had no advocate on his behalf for the hearing, which imposed this condition. In State v. Tier, Your Honors, there is relevant language, I think, from this court that says that a criminal statute cannot be broadened by judicial interpretation to those who are not specifically and unambiguously within its terms. I think to apply the last antecedent rule here would be to do just a thing, to take the modifiers which apply to the entire statute in 2005 and to have them only apply to a portion of the statute by mere implication would twist the meaning just enough to greatly broaden the first group. And if there are no further questions, I see my time has expired.
Thank you. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you.